What's up? This is Pew Pew Pew, and you're listening to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast.
It sucks, I still think Mabel. Shay's the bomb.
Everyone, welcome to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast, episode 7, and we have a really cool interview coming up at the second half of this episode, but the first half, I have a very special guest, my friend Emily. Hello.
Hi, Kristen.
How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining me with this.
I'm very excited to do so.
Have you done a podcast before?
I never have. So all your instructions with, oh, use this app and hit this record is fascinating.
Yeah, except I'm sure it's not how anyone else does podcasts at all. So don't, you know, take it with a grain of salt.
I have no comparison.
Cool. Well, so this is a new experience. Are you nervous?
I am a little. I hate how I sound recorded. So I'm kind of dreading hearing the final product.
But I know, right?
You get used
to it,
right?
That's how I feel every single time. So you're going to have to bear with me today because I'm a little, like, hungover and tired, like, super tired today.
But that means you had a good last night?
Yeah. I wanted everyone to meet you and be introduced to you because I got to meet you at Punk Rock Bowling, which was so cool.
It was. I'm really still excited about that.
And you had been before?
That was the third year we've gone in a row now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Ooh. Kind of. Actually, just in the last few years, really started, like, traveling outside of, like, you know, 1 or 2 hours for shows and went to the Punk and Drublic last year before it turned into Camp Anarchy, and it's been fun. Where we live, you kind of have to travel that far to see, like, a lot of good bands, so.
What state are you in again?
Live in Des Moines, Iowa.
So not many shows get there, so you have to travel.
Yes. It's not bad, though. Like, it's a few hours to Omaha or Kansas City. 5 hours to Chicago, so we make it work.
Yeah. 5 hours is kind of pushing it, I would think.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely a weekend thing. You do it, like, maybe once or twice a year, but for big enough shows or, like, bands you love enough, it's totally worth it.
Have you been to Riot Fest in Chicago?
Once.
Okay. So how was that?
Really looking into going this next year with, like, a lot of the people, like, a lot of the girls talking about, like, oh, let's make this happen, let's do a reunion, and, like, the lineup looks pretty sick, so.
It does. It totally does.
And you're looking into it, right?
Well, kind of. Yeah, I don't know. I have to pick and choose, you know?
Absolutely.
Obviously. So, the Fest looks great, and Riot Fest looks great, and 350 Fest in Chicago looks great. It's just, like, I want to go to all of them, and I can't.
Right.
So I really have to pick and choose. And the fall is hard for me work-wise to get away. So
no,
I'm trying
totally
to
get
figure
that
out. Yeah. Fall's hard for you too, working in schools and all that stuff.
Right. That's what was kind of appealing about the Chicago one is that, like, it wouldn't be like spending a full day like traveling. Like, I could at least get there. And But like you said, like, it's a busy time of year and I only get so many personal days. So like you said, you pick and choose.
Yeah, exactly. So how was this Punk Rock Bowling compared to other ones that you've been to?
This, at least in comparison to the last two, was the first time there were two stages, which I'm still feeling kind of back and forth on. Like, it felt a little bit like, you know, Warped Tour where you're running around and trying to, like, oh, I got to be this stage at this time and this stage. And I didn't love that. But on the flip side, was exposed to so many more bands than I would have any otherwise. So there's pluses and minuses.
Yeah, I was kind of torn on it, too. I mean, obviously, I haven't been before.
Right.
But, I kind of wish the stages were right next to each other because you actually had to walk around to the back, in a sense, to get to the other band.
Right.
That was playing. So they didn't, I guess they did overlap a couple times.
It was kind of cool how they had that screen showing you what was going on. Like, if you're at the second stage, you're seeing what's going on at the main stage when the band wasn't playing, which was kind of cool, but
I think they really tried hard to have the main stage band stop, and then the second stage band start, and then the main stage band start, you know,
they put effort into coordinating it, but even so, it was still like, okay, hustle ass and get over there, and oh, you're gonna miss, you know, 20 minutes of the next one, and do you want to make that sacrifice? And
if they were right next to each other, that might have been a little bit easier, but the fact that you did have to run around and you couldn't see the other stage was a little tricky. And you go to shows with your husband Noah, who's a big punk rock fan, obviously.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, how did you guys meet?
The easiest story is just kind of like through friends, acquaintances, and his best friend at the time, and I actually got to be a little bit closer, and that guy, Tim, was kind of one of my go-to like concert buddies. And so Noah and I just slowly became more just seeing each other more like through that.
Yeah, at shows and stuff?
A little bit. Like when I first met him, he was pursuing a doctorate at, well, I was pursuing an undergrad, and I thought he was just this way cooler, way hotter than me, like, you know, punk rock dude from California. And then, like, you know, that entire scene that I'd, you know, just dreamt, you know, read about 10 years too late and didn't really like consider, like, even think I had a shot. And he had a girlfriend anyway. And, you know, just years and years go on and the timing worked out all right.
And then you guys were both single at the same time and it just happened.
Essentially, yes.
Aw, that's so cool.
It is.
And it was really cute at this one, at this punk rock bowling too, because he got there a day before you. You had a plane delay.
Yeah. Last two times I've flown out of Des Moines, just like the flight doesn't leave. I get delayed in a day. And so my long weekend plans kind of get shot to hell, but... Yeah, that's it was terrible. Really cute getting texts from, like, him and from Lisa. Like, we found each other and we're having fun and reunion. And it was just, it's really cool that, like, you know, to meet people, like, you know, remember them from one show and then, like, you know, just kind of feel like you have this instant community where, like, they weren't creeped out by, like, you know, some dude, like, and he wasn't all, like, being some creepy dude. He was appreciative to be, like, you know, have, like, people to hang with. And it was really fun.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, I worked really hard to make it so that everybody felt like we could have this Mabel Syndrome community there and the people that were going. And there were, I don't know how many, maybe 10 of us, 12 of us, something like that, that met up at the show. And we met up the first night. And it was so cool because that first night it was like Pennywise. It was the big Pennywise show. And
Sick of It All and Drug Church played with that. I was
devastated
to miss that.
Yeah, it was really good. It was a really fun show. But so Noah was hanging with all of the girls, and it just felt like, I mean, because we're all girls that have hung with dudes forever anyway.
Right.
So it felt totally normal and fun, and it was great to have him. And then he made you this little cheat sheet.
Yeah, it was so cute. And actually, it wasn't for me so much as for him to, like, be kind of figuring out, okay, who did I meet and which one was which? Like, all the, like, names had, like, I think, you know, who had the Elk Line Trio tattoo and who had, you know, who was from this place. And it was,
that was so funny. It was at the top. It was like Kristen Brunette, Jessica not here. And then it had arrows pointing
down. The flow and chart from like the originals and
the OGs at the top.
Exactly.
And then a flow chart down. And oh my God, it was just the cutest thing. It was really funny.
Yeah, Lisa, like, I think Lisa took that from him because, like, he got it out to be like, okay, I met. And he's looking at his list and she's like, oh my God, you have to let me take a picture of that.
Oh, that is so funny. Yeah, no, he was great. And then we had the pool party on the second day.
That was fun.
And had you just gotten in?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, I checked into the Nugget maybe like half an hour before that, like put on a suit and got there. I think I saw you guys before I saw him actually that morning.
Okay.
I was just happy I got my flight to get me to Vegas like for that show and before any of the main stage stuff. So, I mean, it sucked to miss the first night and like the first, like, hey, we're all meeting each other for the first time. But like, it kind of felt like I just... you know, came into like an already established like thing and like good vibes were going and a lot of alcohol was being drunk. It was a good, great time.
It was really fun. Yeah. So I decided to rent a cabana. So when I heard that there was this pool party on the first, you know, the first Saturday, and I wanted to make some place where we could all meet up. There were a few of us that had each other's text numbers and we could message and things like that. But there were a bunch of other people that follow Mabel Syndrome that, I didn't have their numbers and stuff, but I definitely wanted to meet everybody. So it was important to me to kind of throw a party or throw a get together or have some sort of gathering where we could all meet up early within the festival so that we could spend the rest of the weekend together, or however, you know, people found somebody that they want to spend the weekend together with or whatever. Because, I mean, as somebody who always... Thanks. Yeah. I mean, as somebody who always goes to concerts and festivals by myself, mm-hmm. it was important to me to, for people to meet. And so if anybody was there by themselves, they could feel like they'd always see somebody they knew around.
Sure.
And would have,
you make that face recognition. You have the conversation at the beginning of the weekend. Cause like, you're right. Yeah. I mean, that where you guys had the night before, that was my day to like associate like names to, you know, Facebook entries and accounts, and like, because I'd met Lisa and Tiffany at an Interrupter show with Noah in March, and so like I already felt like, okay, those two were like my new internet friends. But then like, oh, you know, I made that same kind of instantaneous connection with, you know, like 10-15 more people, and then you run into them like at the main shows, at the hotel, and like immediately, like,
it just,
you know,
it's just comforting, like, and it just feels good, and
it is.
So yeah, it was really fun. I was shocked by just the good vibes all around. Not that I didn't think there were going to be good vibes, but it's like, I felt bad for anyone staying at the Golden Nugget who wasn't there for Punk Rock Bowling. Like, the little families on there on vacation and people there on their honeymoon. It's like, oh yeah, you picked the wrong weekend, people.
Oh my God. Like, you think, you look at like the old people in the casino just being like looking around at these people and like, you know, in their vests and their like, you know, dyed hair and mohawks, going, what the fuck?
Totally. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was so awesome.
Oh yeah. And like being part of it and being like, yeah, you know, punks in Vegas, like take over. But like,
and everywhere you look, like, I was just overwhelmed because I was just like, everywhere you look, it's punk rock people. And you just feel this camaraderie, and everybody had good, like, such good vibes. I don't know if you ever saw a fight. I never saw a fight the whole weekend. Did you see anything?
No, not that you mention it. Yeah. I mean, like, there were, like, you know, some, like, you know, dick comments or, like, bro, like, back off. Like, you know, like,
sure.
Coming from the stage, like, to the crowd and stuff at, like, some of the, like, late night club shows. But
yeah, okay.
You're right. I mean, I don't remember, like, anyone being ejected or... Or, like, yeah, the punch is being thrown. That's a good point.
Yeah, everything had a really positive, like, really good feel. And I think for me, too, and I don't know if you feel this way, because you don't have, like, you know, like a mohawk or where, you know, or anything. It's like, I just felt, sometimes I feel left out or, like, I don't fit in or whatever. And so to be around everybody where I feel like I fit in and like, oh, these are my people. Like, it just felt really good because I don't get that very often.
No, I mean, something like that was funny, like a few times, like, you know, you're wearing, like, I was wearing a Mariachi El Bronx shirt. No, Noah was wearing a Mariachi El Bronx shirt. And then we cross paths with this dude who's like, it's the literally same font, same shirt, but it says The Bronx. And they look at each other and they're just like, nice shirt, man. Like,
right.
You just have that immediate, like, you know, sense of, like you said, camaraderie, that you're right. Like, even though I don't have like a mohawk or something and go to punk shows, like, I'm not like that badass looking. Like, I still feel like amongst my people when, you know, we're all wearing the black, the black shirts and the uniform and the punk and the fishnets and all that.
Yeah. And your shirt, you know, your band shirt or whatever. And all the artists are walking around, too, which is crazy. It's like, yeah, I'm in the line for grilled cheese with Milo. Like, this is weird.
I know. I tried not to, like, especially I'm this Midwest girl. And so, like, I'm sitting there, like, you know, we got breakfast and there's freaking Dennis Lixon, like, who in my eyes is like punk rock legend, walks out of the restaurant we're going to, just walks down the street like a normal man, and I'm just like,
right,
you rocked my world last night.
Did you say anything?
No. I mean, he's fucking like lead singer of Refused. I was just like, you know, that was one of my like, like,
I know it's there are times I say something, like, I was in an elevator with Johnny Rio of Street Dogs, and we're both from Boston, and we have a lot of mutual friends and stuff, and so I just felt like, okay, there's two people in an elevator, it's me and him, I have to say something, because I've actually kind of met him at shows and stuff like that, so I did introduce myself to him. And then actually one time I was so I did a few interviews at Punk Rock Bowling, and one was with Mike McColgan, who's the singer of Street Dogs.
Yeah, you'd said that.
Yeah, it was.
And
awesome.
I ran into him actually getting donuts at, I don't know, the place down the street that's like the really good donuts. Like he's there, and like that's someone I could look to and be like, dude, I love you. Like, I have a like lasting like just appreciation for him after he showed up and played a free show. Did I tell you about this?
No.
I'm from Wisconsin originally, and that's one of the states that in the last 10 years has like lost like significant collective bargaining rights to, like, not trying to get too political, but like at that time, this, you know, public school teacher and my mom, like, in a lot of like, you know, people in unions were protesting at the Capitol, and Mike McColgan, Tom Morello, and Tim McElraith all showed up for free and played on the steps of the Capitol in Wisconsin in February, which is cold as hell. Yeah. And since then, it's like, oh, this guy, yeah, he sings about working class and, like, fighting for, like, you know, your rights and, like, your, like, you know, dignity. But then he showed up.
Yeah. Like, that's amazing.
And so, I mean, just since then, I've had, which was, what, 2010, I've had such a love for that man now. And then I saw him buying donuts, and I'm like, you're great.
Oh, yeah. So you did say something to him?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to, like, you know, you're both in line to get coffee or get food or something. But, like, to see some, you know, see someone else, like, you know, walking away. He's in, you know, Dennis was in his own world. He did not need someone, like, standing on the street corner. I mean, that's like, you know, some dude, like, you know, whistling at, like, a hot babe as she walks by, you know?
Totally. Yeah, you have to pick and choose your moments.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, if they're standing around and you're standing around, it's, I think it's totally fine to say, hey, and whatever, you know, but if they're doing something, or on their way to do something, like, you have to be mindful of the situation and pick and choose your moments.
That's kind of how I felt.
Mike and I met earlier that morning at Lenny Lashley had done like an acoustic show.
I remember that.
I slept through it,
but wanted to go.
I know, it was so good. And
sure.
Mike got up and sang, and Johnny was there. The whole, you know, it was just really great. But Mike and I were going to go do the interview, and so we're walking from the Grand to the Nugget together, and this guy passes us, or is behind us in a street dog shirt.
Oh, sure.
And doesn't realize that Mike McColgan's walking in front of him.
Nice.
And Mike got distracted for a minute, and I felt like I had to do my like punk rock community duty, and I pointed to the I pointed to the guy's shirt.
Oh, nice.
I was like, do you know that's Mike McColgan? Like, if you want to say hi, now's your chance. Like, he's right there. You have a street dog shirt. And he's like, no fucking way. And I felt bad doing that to Mike a little bit, but I had to like make this fan's day.
Sure.
You know? I felt this obligation to let him know that the person that he felt strong enough to wear their shirt was walking in front of him. And so, you know,
that's
so he did.
Sweet.
He was like, no, fuck. Yeah. I just felt this obligation. And so, yeah. So the guy was super cool. He just said hi to Mike and shook his hand and, you know, whatever. And then Mike and I continued on and we, you know, hung out and did our interview and stuff. But yeah, I do feel this obligation sometimes to let people know. Also a similar story. I'm friends with some of the guys in Less Than Jake and Chris and I were hanging out one time after a show, and the server was coming around, and he goes, oh, were you guys at the show tonight? And Chris and I are like, yeah. And he goes, how were they? I really wanted to see Less Than Jake.
Oh, funny.
And Chris goes, oh, they suck. Like, they were really terrible.
That's awesome.
He goes, they did not do well tonight at all. And Chris had a hat on. I guess, you know, this guy probably, whatever. But he's like, no, they were terrible. And later that night, Chris was in the bathroom. And I told the guy, I'm like, do you know you just were talking to the singer of Less Than Jake about Less Than Jake? Like, and he's like, no, that was him. And I was like, yeah.
You know, that's the thing, though, about, like, you know, these are musicians. I mean, we primarily listen to them, you know.
Yeah.
Not, you know, music videos have basically died unless you really, like, make a point to see them. Or, like, you know, I know, like, I can, like, pick out of a lineup, you know, my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But
everybody else.
You know, bands I like that I'd still pay to go see. I'd be that same waiter going, yeah, so, hey, like me. I don't know Less Than Jake, so I'd make that same comment. Right. Oh, my friends say Less Than Jake is really good. Hey, what do you think? Their lead singer's like, yeah, they are, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know what everybody looks like. So I would totally make the same mistake. It's just really funny when it, you know.
Yeah, when you know, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And that's actually cool on Chris's part to like have that kind of sense of humor about his own, like, you know, celebrity. Oh,
yeah. Right. Yeah. No, he's super hilarious. But I had such an amazing time just being surrounded by, first of all these women in this Mabel Syndrome community that, I mean, I created. Like, it feels weird for me to say that. Like, I created it.
No, you did.
But then everybody else has taken it and run with it. And it's attracted so many amazing people. And I feel so, so happy about that. And just to meet everybody was awesome. And it was great, too, because I'm not a big drinker, but I did some, like, day drinking, which means I could, like, sober up at night and go to bed at a reasonable time. The club shows weren't super appealing to me.
Sure.
And I was there to do a lot of interviews, and I did some work with Punk Rock Bowling Festival and stuff. So I couldn't be hungover. I couldn't feel like shit.
Yeah.
So I just, I had to really be mindful of that so I could like hang out, do some day drinking. And then I was usually in bed by like 1 a.m. and got a good like 7-8 hours of sleep. I know. Yeah.
I mean, it's doable, even if you go to the club shows. But yeah, I was so excited to see there was a Latino ska night, like Los Carnales and like Viernes 13 were all together. Yeah. And by the end of the show, like, you know, I'd just been like, you know, skanking and like, you know, at the show and dancing all day. And like, you're out in the sun. And like,
right. By
the end, the headliner, I'm like literally just kind of like,
yeah,
dropping to my feet and like, going, no, I want to go home.
Right. Yeah. So. And some people can survive on no sleep. I can't.
No, I'm not that person either.
No. I need sleep. I need food. I need, like, the essentials to be able to be a normal person the next day. I really feel now like a festival person. That was literally the first festival I had ever been to in 41 years. So
that's so exciting.
I know. But yeah, now I get it. I get it. Because I was always like, why would I want to see, I can see Descendants in a basement, you know, here in Boston at a club show or something, or at House of Blues or something. And why would I want to go see them at a giant festival? Like, it just doesn't make sense. But
see, that's your big city privilege. Exactly. Mine is, I have to go there to see these bands.
Exactly. Yeah.
But so, still, I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah. Imagine if I was like, oh my God, that was the worst weekend ever. It was so terrible. No, it was.
I was so tired. It was too much.
It was too much. Yeah, no, I didn't feel that way at all. I absolutely loved it. As the second half of this coming up in a few minutes, we're going to have the interview that I did with Pat, who is the drummer of Anti-Flag.
Yes, and I've been so excited to hear about this since you mentioned it like a few months ago.
Yeah.
Like that, oh, I'm talking to Pat especially, I thought was so cool.
Yeah.
Because there's, and I don't know anything about your interview, but like, I'm really hoping that it comes up or you talk about, there's this like classic aspect to an Anti-Flag show where towards the end, and it doesn't matter, in a tiny basement show with like 15 people or literally like festival, there's hundreds of people, all of a sudden like, okay, the show stops for a little bit and Pat and the drummer all of a sudden out in the crowd, and then there's Chris and he jumps off it and like, and they sing, and lately it's been Brandenburg Gate, and you're just like, whoa, the drummer is right in front. And like,
yeah.
I've always wondered, how does that start? Like, you know, was that his idea? Like, hey, I want to be more part of this, or?
Oh, wow. Yeah, we do talk about that.
Oh, I can't wait
to
hear.
We're going to answer all your questions.
Yes. I'm pumped.
It's really funny. He busted my balls at the beginning of this interview.
Really?
Yeah. And it started out a little tough, but I think I held my own. He was like, why are you interviewing me and not a woman? If you're a woman podcast and you're about women empowerment, how come you're not out there interviewing women bands? And I was like, whoa, like instantly on the defensive a little bit. But I think I held my own, and I told him that, and this is something I've talked a lot about in blogs and various places, that, you know, sometimes women need, unfortunately, sometimes women need a man to empower them. And it's not, you know, not always, but unfortunately, and we're certainly coming out of this where mm-hmm. men have more power than women, and there's more men in the scene than women, and all these things, it's getting slightly more even. It's still way not, but you know, the reason that we talk to men and the reason that I interview men is because I like
still the majority of who's there, really.
Exactly. And I'm not going to just interview women just because they're women. They have to be women in bands that I actually like. Mm-hmm. And so, and I do. I really try hard to do that. But I like to hear men empower women, because sometimes it takes a man. And he does talk about this, where at a show, a woman or a girl or a woman will come up to him at the merch table or whatever, and they'll say, oh, I wish I could be in a band. And he's like, you can. And they're like, no, yeah. I can't. And he's like, no, you can and you should. And they're like, oh, wow. And so sometimes girls and women need somebody to tell them, no, you can and you should do this. And that's actually how our podcast got started, was Jessica and I would never in a million years consider doing a podcast until Danny, our friend from Face to Face, the drummer of Face to Face, was like, you guys should do a podcast. And we were like, no. And then he's like, no, really, you should. And we were like, you believe in us? Like, you really Aww. Think we should do that? And he was like, yeah. And so
I think you're right that a lot of women that for whatever reason were socialized to like not, I mean, there's lip service too. Yes, I am strong and independent, but yeah. Like to go forward and like put yourself out there that I am going to create this. I would like, I mean, especially like as a high school teacher, I see this in my students. I see it myself that like mm-hmm. we do it with encouragement. Like right. it's a scary. Very, when it's you're a the rare minority, and amazing, amazing woman that will go do it herself.
Yeah.
That's like,
yeah.
I got this. I have this vision. Look at me. Look at us do this. That I think you're right, is that a lot of times, especially like you said, where, you know, I mean, you guys created Mabel Syndrome in part to like have the punk girls find each other. It's not like, you know, we're a 1-to-1 ratio and just doing our thing.
And like to so empower people to have a voice. So like, you know, I don't see why women can't be doing journalism in the punk rock scene, but we're usually not encouraged to do so, or the, you know, the punk rock websites and magazines and different things are generally men. And so, but it's really hard to establish your reputation. You have to work twice as hard, twice as smart, with a smile, with, you know, with your hair done, like you, it's, you know, it's hard. And, that's why I wanted to do this, is to have the basics there for women to go and do whatever they want to do. Like, if you want to go interview this band, just tell me and you can go interview this band. Or right. like, Justine is super into metal and want to interview metal bands and have a metal podcast. Like, it's expensive to start a podcast and to have the online subscription services and stuff. I'm like, we have that. Just do your show through our platform and go interview metal bands. Like,
that's really cool. And so, like, it can benefit both of you that she gets a platform and then like the punk girls that also like metal.
Totally.
You grow.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, it was fun with Pat. We totally vibed towards the end, that's but good. At the beginning he gave me a little shit, but I do think I held my own, which was good. But he was, I mean, obviously he's, and most anti-flag interviews talk about politics, right? Like that's
right.
a super political band. And we did, certainly things came up, but for the most part, I wanted to know about him and about his band. And so I didn't do too much about politics. Like, they're out there. You know, if you Google anti-flag politics, you can find a bunch of shit. But if you Google Pat and his personal life, you're not going to find a lot of stuff.
Right. I've always thought that's kind of interesting. I mean, like, that's what draws me to them, like, to begin with, because it's probably not shocking that this, you know, high school teacher from Madison, Wisconsin is, you know, all about all of their message. And, you know, and so I was actually like stressing a little bit and talking to Noah before this. He's just like, you're not going to go on a political rant, are you? Because I know you're going to be all inspired by, like, you know, tearing everything down and let's start a new order, this and like, you know, because I mean, that's like the punk rock anthem on top of like, then the very, you know, this system we have going is bullshit message. And like, we're not going to go into politics. No one cares what I have to say, but, but yeah, that is totally what draws me to this band.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, me too. I love somebody, you know, these incredibly talented musicians speaking and singing about issues that matter to me.
Absolutely. And
you know what's interesting too? As we're talking to Pat about his life, it becomes clear, just like Mike McColgan of Street Dogs, that he walks the walk.
Right.
That he is passionate about the issues that he's passionate about, and that he lives in Pittsburgh for a reason, and he believes in this for a reason. Like, it's just, he's not like living in Hollywood, living the dream, talking about the working class.
Totally. Like, you respect, like, that, right. They grew up, like, they live where they grew up.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for people to listen to this interview. We did it like, oh my gosh, back in, I want to say February. It's been sitting in the bank for a long time.
And I'm so excited to hear it.
Thanks. Yeah. And we were at this freak fest or something like that down in Providence, Rhode Island. And I walk in and it is a freak fest. It was like people swallowing swords.
Oh,
and
wow.
People walking around in zombie costumes. And this is February. Like, no, probably these people haven't been out to do anything in a long time because it's just dreary in
sure.
February in Providence, Rhode Island. But everyone, like, let their freak flag fly that weekend and, like, had costumes and craziness going on. Oh, and the best part, I'm not going to ruin it. The last 30 seconds of this interview are the best 30 seconds of any interview I've ever done.
Really? That's intriguing.
I know, right? So you have to stay tuned for that and listen to the very end. It's hilarious the way this interview ended. Like, it ended abruptly for a very funny reason. And so you guys can... you'll hear that at the end. Do you want to pick the song that's going to play at the end?
Sure. Let's listen to One People, One Struggle, because I'd say the message of the song is just as relevant today, if not even more important than the probably more than 10 years ago that they wrote it.
That sounds great. Thank you for doing this with me.
Thank you, Kristen. It was fun to kind of relive punk rock bowling and talk about one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, awesome.
Keep it interesting for me and I won't get bored.
All right, there you go. I'll try. No pressure. All right, so this is Kristen and I'm here with Pat. Thanks so much for doing this with me.
My pleasure. We are in a bathroom in a dirty rock club in Providence. Yes, Providence.
Yeah.
And we are in a bathroom only because it's the most quiet place we could find.
Yeah. So there still may be some background noise. But
yes, if you hear the rock and roll, that's what's happening outside.
Yeah. Have you wandered around down there?
Down there meaning in the club or down there meaning...
in the club.
Oh, a little bit. I've seen there's some characters here today.
There's
people
like
are
clowns.
Getting their freak on.
For sure.
It is the Freak Fest and they're getting their freak on.
This is like the 10th annual Freak Fest.
Really?
I've never been here.
Oh, I've never been here either. Everybody's been really great to us and we were very lucky to be here. But there's a lot of freak going on
there. There's like zombies, fire eaters.
Yeah.
Is there another
stage?
Yes, but there was just like a DJ at it when I saw it.
Because there's like people who are putting things into their bodies that shouldn't be in there and all kinds of stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we'll find out when we get down there. It'll be good.
So you were asking a little bit about this podcast.
Yes,
so
I was.
I'll just give you a quick update. So,
I want to start it with, you have to give me the opportunity to ask the question.
Okay, go for it.
The question was, if you are a female-based and female empowerment podcast, why are you talking to me?
Right. Well, a few different things. First of all, so we don't just cover female musicians.
Okay.
We certainly like to back them and support them. And
yes.
They're on our podcast all the time.
Okay.
And that's great. But if we... obviously, the punk rock scene is... the majority is male.
Yeah. The more women who you talk to, the more young people realize... oh, I can do that. I can be a jackass just like that person.
Yeah.
And then I should be in a band as well.
Right.
So the more the more content we provide for people who aren't old white guys, the better it is for everybody.
Right. That's true. Yes. So we do cover that a lot.
Yeah.
But also, it's empowering to hear from men who are supportive of women. And so I know this band, and I've heard a lot of your interviews and things talking about women in the scene and supporting women in the scene. And it's something that we're passionate about. And our fan base are big Anti-Flag fans.
Yes.
And so that's why I decided to interview you.
Okay.
This is about female fans of punk rock. And I don't. There was never an outlet for female fans of punk rock to be ourselves and not be labeled groupies and not be labeled just the girlfriends of bands or whatever it is, right? So about 3 years ago, when I approached this girl about this, well, actually, what I had done is approached a magazine, like a popular punk rock magazine, and I said, "Hey, can I write for you? I have a master's degree. I know how to write. What you know? What can I do for you?" And I got the cold shoulder. And so I was
because you're a woman.
I don't know.
Ah, fuck
I'm not going to say that.
let's blow the whistle on who's that magazine.
So I said, fuck that. I'm going to do it myself.
Amen.
I'm
going
to start my own thing.
Amen. Love
it. And so we get women all around the world that are like, thank you. Like, I finally feel like I can go to a show again. And especially, like, being a 40-year-old woman and kind of I have kids and now getting back into the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Other women are contacting us like, thank you. Like, I feel like I can go to a show alone. Like, I'm here alone tonight. Like, I feel like I can go check out the music I want to see.
Well, the tragedy is, and I realize that my perception of punk rock, every punk rock community creates itself in its own image. Mm-hmm. So each little community has its own morals and its own ethics and its own beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But the community that we grew out of, was one of inclusiveness and that women were just as valuable as everybody else. And and so when I hear that within the punk rock community there's that sexism and that and quite frankly the homophobia and all the other stuff that is out there, and I'm like, that is exactly not what we wanted or what we were creating and what the community that we came out of. I realize there's some fucked up people out there who call themselves punk rockers.
Nothing you can do about that,
But from, so it makes me concerned that even within the punk rock community, there is still this level of sexism that some people don't feel as though they're included in it, and that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you're addressing that is awesome.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But
you don't need me to tell you that. But
no, I do. It helps to hear it because it's not like we don't get paid. We're just doing this out of a passion project.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
why
we're all here. We're all here with passion.
That's true.
The dudes down there putting the makeup on and and cutting their pants up, they're not getting paid to do that. They're doing that because
they love the experience of it. Yeah, for sure. But it's helpful to hear that, you know, that people appreciate what we're doing. So, anyways, it is funny, in doing research for this interview, a lot of your interviews are very, obviously, talk about politics.
Yeah.
And you're very kind of earnest.
Yes.
And so I kind of wanted to go...
Yes, I have no sense of humor. Haven't you realized that already?
I wanted to go a different feel,
like
get to know you a little bit better, if you're okay with that. But,
I will tell you that I'm not that interesting, but go ahead.
Okay,
we'll give you a shot and we'll see if it works.
Okay, I'll help you.
I'll throw you
softballs.
Okay, good.
So you're a new dad.
I am a new dad, yes.
How old is your baby?
He's 3 weeks today. Three months today.
Oh, that's exciting.
It is, and it's brutal that I'm out here playing rock shows when he's at home. And he actually got sick, so we left. We're just doing 4 shows this weekend. The day I left, he started to get sick.
Oh.
So his mom's home with him, and she's like, fuck you, you're on tour, and I'm home with the baby. So it's a challenge to... even in the short time that he's been alive, to figure out how to fit everything else in your life together, which obviously know as you've gone through this process already.
Yep. I have 2 little boys. They're 8 and 6.
Yeah.
And
are they shitty or are they okay?
They're okay. The first one was a little...
Mine's a little shitty right now, so...
Well, he was colicky.
Okay,
And that was tough.
Yeah.
So he cried a lot.
Yeah.
And he's a passionate
guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, good. Which is good. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, that'll be great when he grows up.
But it's not good right now.
Yeah, it's a little hard right now. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of women who choose to stay home or are home with the baby and their spouse or the other way around.
Stay home. She just isn't working, so I'm out working this weekend. She's working as soon as I get home.
Okay.
Yeah, no,
but
no.
It's always hard to have a spouse on the road, I guess, for sure. My point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And especially if they're having fun at a punk rock show, right? You know?
Yes.
As the perception is. So, do any of the other guys have kids in the band?
No, I'm the first breeder within our group.
Okay.
So, it's a whole new world for us of trying to figure out how. Because our whole, for the last 25 years, we've been on tour for 30 to 70% of the year. So, to then have to be responsible for another human being makes those decisions much harder.
Did you have to have like a sit down with the guys? And a lot of bands have like a 2-week rule, kind of.
Yeah, well, we were on a 3-week rule.
Okay. Now,
we've been trying to do a 3-week rule for the last, so a 3-week rule is trying to be on tour for 3 weekends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in the last 10, 15 years of my life, I've never been on a tour for more than 4 or 5 weeks. It just never happens because there's always like, they really want you to play in Belarus.
Right. Can you add one more?
Can you add another show in Belarus? So you're like, I guess we're going to play Belarus and be out for 4 weeks. So yeah, so that'll make it even more hard to be away as long as we are away.
Yeah. Is anyone else married?
Head's married. But they all we all have long-term relationships.
Hooked up.
Yeah.
So there might be another breeder.
We are getting old, so so the breeding is there is a time limit on breeding, and
it's inevitable, maybe. Yeah. So talking about how you guys formed, I know you and Justin kind of started.
Correct.
Well, you grew up together.
We grew up together. We played soccer together. Yes.
Awesome.
You have done your research.
Yeah.
So
did you go to the same elementary school?
No. Actually we never went to the same schools. We just, through like club soccer, we got to know each other and then played on different teams with each other over the years. But yeah, he went to a you're a fucked up kid school. And I went to a public school.
Okay, got it. And did you become fast friends, or were you kind of acquaintances for a while?
We always sort of knew each other and always sort of interacted with each other, yeah. So we were both looking for something and then found each other and started looking for stuff together.
Okay, and so when were you introduced to punk rock?
Probably 14 or 15. He's the youngest of 9.
Oh.
So then I'll tell you what kind of fucked up family that is.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of older brothers and sisters who had gone through different eras of punk rock and influenced us on that. And it was interesting because his brother and sisters were older, they had a different perception of what the punk rock was compared to our peer group, so we were able to sort of bring those two things together and made something slightly different than what was going on in our community, and which made it interesting to people.
So did you play drums growing up?
I tried to play drums.
Okay.
Justin is actually a better drummer than me, but he can also play guitar and other things, and I can't. So by default, I became the drummer because I could only play drums.
Mm-hmm.
And he, depending on who we could find to be in a band with, he would play different things.
Okay.
But then ultimately he settled on guitar and I still play drums.
Right. I was curious if you were like the kid that asked your parents for a drum set or...
My personal life, my dad played drums when he was young and was told that he should go to school and drums were a dead-end thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even a profession. It was just a dead-end. You just hang out with junkies and fuck-ups. So he had a drum kit. His mom died. He brought the drum kit home to our house. And I was like, this is the coolest thing in the world. And so I started playing, and then I just kept playing.
Okay. And then at some point, you and Justin had a conversation about starting a band, or?
Well, we always wanted to be in a band.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, this is a thing about, people are like, oh, do you want to play music? It's like, I never wanted to play music. I just wanted to be in a band.
Okay.
I like the idea of dudes being together.
Yeah.
Just doing things together.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess we have to play music to do that. Yeah.
Like, this is my group.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So the being in the band was what I wanted. Playing music is is all right, but sometimes playing music is dumb. But being in a community or a small group is interesting to me.
So if you guys started, this was supposed to be my icebreaker. So sometimes
we've got to rewind.
Sometimes I find myself saying anti-flag and sometimes anti. Is it like different parts of the country that
it's
says
it? It's different
that?
Parts of the country and different parts of the world. We've always said anti-flag.
Okay.
But in different places they say anti, and then they get all embarrassed. They're like, well, who said anti? And I'm like, I don't give a fuck what you say.
It doesn't matter.
And also we learned later on in our existence that the hyphen is not necessary. However, it graphically it looks better with the hyphen.
Right. Yeah. And the F capitalized.
It's two words. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you guys started being a band, I guess, in high school maybe?
I graduated high school.
Okay.
I went and traveled around and then got kicked out of the group that I was traveling with. And then Justin and I went to California together to play music. Then the money ran out and we came back to Pittsburgh. And my money ran out faster than his did. And so I came back to Pittsburgh, went to school for a little bit. Justin came back about a half a year later. And then at that point, we'd been playing through the whole time. But then that's when we got the first bass player, Andy. And we really were able to start putting together shows. Everything sort of came together at that point because the Pittsburgh music community had already established some independent venues to be doing shows, and we got enough songs together to put on to be able to do shows. We had done shows before that, but once Justin came back from California and I was already home, that's when things sort of gelled.
But you were anti-flag before.
We'd already set up shows and done shows before that.
Right.
But they were less successful.
Okay. But just the concept, I mean, it's an interesting concept for such young teenagers to come up with.
Well, we were in a community of really fucked up people. There was that time in the early 90s, there was a lot of rah, rah, rah America and the punk rock scene, a lot of very chauvinistic, very... male-dominated dick wagon bullshit, and so we were really a response to that, that rah 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 God bless America stuff that was happening at that time.
That makes sense. And when in your life did you decide to? I don't know if you call yourself straight edge or are you with.
I come from a line of. Alcoholics and fuck-ups.
Mm-hmm.
So very early on, I didn't want to perpetuate that. So the fact that there was a community out there of people who were like, this is not how I want to live. I want to live differently. I want to do something. It was also a response because the Pittsburgh music community was full of drunks and drug addicts. And so it was a way... And my friends, I'm not speaking ill of them. I realized that that's not how I particularly wanted to be. And I knew that if I went down that road, I would go very far down that rabbit hole. So I chose not to do that.
And are the other members of the band straight edge necessarily or not?
Over time, things have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But for me, for the other guys, it was, for me, it's a life and death thing because I've seen around me what the effects of it, and I don't want to have that.
Yeah, I have a really good friend that very similar reason made that choice.
Yeah.
And but I would imagine the early days of touring with the party. I mean, our age, maybe bands aren't partying quite as much as they used to. I don't know. But
for us, it was never about the party.
But the other people, other bands that you were touring with, maybe.
It was funny because we were the younger. We were like the little brothers of the cool bands in the scene.
Yeah.
So they're like, these little kids are funny. They're a fucking mess. They don't even drink and do drugs. It's weird.
Okay.
But they're all right kids, and we're gonna take them under our wing and not be shitty to them, be nice to them.
Right.
So we were very lucky in that. So again, that all sort of gelled and came together in a very lucky way that we had these older bands who were very successful. Who didn't see us as competition, didn't see it, they saw us as this fucked up, weird little group of people. So they were very kind to us and took us under their wing and helped us rather than, like, you don't fucking do drugs, get away from me, you're a swear loser or whatever. They were like, no, you're a weird kid, but come on, you can, we'll show you how to book a tour.
And you felt like you could hang out with people that were super wasted?
I was the guy who drove the van home when things got bad, I was always, I always had a good role in the group, because if everybody was fucked up, I would be the one to drive everybody home so they could get to work the next day.
Right. Yeah, so you're good to have around.
Yeah, I'm still good to have around. My wife's like, I'm getting fucking wasted. Like, I guess I'm driving again. It's cool.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And what about the decision to be vegan?
Early on, we were all of us were vegetarian early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, I guess, the early 2000s, I just looked around and said, there's very little in my life that I need that is an animal product.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, it's an easy transformation to go vegan rather than just vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also in the early 2000s, products were coming on the market.
Right.
The magic hand of capitalism was working,
mm-hmm.
where it was easier to be vegan than it was 10 years before.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of like a no-brainer, like, oh, this
this
stuff is causing suffering in the world. I can limit that suffering by making these choices in my life,
mm-hmm.
and that's a better way for me.
What was the hard thing to give up?
Chocolate chip cookies, but
like baked goods that were harder to come from.
Yeah, when you're in the middle of, I don't know. Again, we'll go back to Belarus. You're in Belarus, and everything sucks, and it's raining and shitty, and you're wearing dirty clothes, and you're like, I'd like to have a brownie. That would make my life better.
Yeah,
you can't find it in Belarus. Well, if you're in the States, you can find a vegan brownie in most shops. But
you do have to search for it.
You have to search a little bit, but there's a higher probability that you're going to find one.
Yeah. And being on the road for as many years as you guys have and touring with all different bands, I was just kind of curious, like, do you have really good friends in other bands? Do you feel...
We have very good acquaintances in other bands.
Yeah.
It's like a fraternity in the sense that if you've done a tour, if you've gone through the experience, there's a... people, you can understand other people who have also done it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never done it, it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, you're partying all the time. I'm like, no.
Right.
You're like, you live like this. You're like, no. It's a very different motivation that keeps at least the people from in the bands that we travel and have played with over the
mm-hmm.
years. The motivation is much less about... Yeah, it's like an addiction. You have to be here. You have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what is motivating you more than being here for the party or whatever.
Right.
That's not really... Because if that's the motivation, you would find a different genre of music or a different lifestyle to have.
Yeah. It's just interesting. I know from interviewing different bands, some people are super outgoing on the road, and some people kind of keep to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, or like, just, I'm going to play the venue, and then I'm going to try to find a spot where I can just be by myself.
Yeah, that's me. That's sort of me. That's my vibe.
Where's the hotel?
Yeah.
Get me there now.
It's not so much where's the hotel, but I like to be in the environment, but I don't want to interact. If I could be a ghost, that would be my ideal situation. So I can see the show, I want to be part of it, but I don't necessarily need to be interacting with everybody about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm kind of like that too. In fact, downstairs when I was waiting, I found, do you know that there's like a pinball arcade attached to this? And everything's free.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I know.
Yeah.
So I just played pinball for like 45 minutes.
Everything is, everything play pinball for free.
So, but it was the same thing. Like, I'm just going to sit here and play pinball by myself.
Yeah.
I can listen to the music and hang out, but I'm not really interacting with anyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally.
You get it. Why aren't you in a band? You should be doing it.
I have no musical ability.
None of us do. That's why we're here. We could have been doing something else.
Do you feel like I would guess Justin is probably one of your oldest friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you feel like he knows you almost better than anyone else?
Yes. Yeah. In a good and bad way. When we travel, we sleep in the same room together, and we're together all the time. And the value of us knowing each other is knowing when to give each other space, because mm-hmm. and because being in a band for as long as we have, it's not about how skilled you are as a band, it's how mm-hmm. skilled you are to keep everybody mm-hmm. moving together in the same direction.
Yeah. I talked to Bad Cop about, like, they have a safe word.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If they need
yeah.
space,
yeah.
they have a safe
like,
word.
Stop fucking with me.
Yes.
We're done.
Yeah.
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 yeah. Actually,
tapping
it's funny because I've seen, I saw Bad Cop have a, it wasn't an intervention, but it was a band discussion
yeah.
on Warped Tour when I was with them. I was like, oh, they have skills.
Yeah.
They're
going
to last.
They really do.
Yeah.
yeah.
They're going to figure out how to make this all work so everybody can get what they need
right.
without taking advantage of anybody else.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool as an older band that you saw that in them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You kind of recognize that.
Yeah, but they're smart.
They're
smart.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like, again, because you've been touring for so many years, did you have friends in all the different cities?
I wouldn't call friends in different cities, but we have people that we know
yeah.
in different cities, for sure.
Is Pittsburgh more of a hometown?
Pittsburgh is, yeah. But the great thing about Pittsburgh is it's a good place to go away from.
Mm-hmm.
We can live pretty well in Pittsburgh because the economy is pretty depressed
mm-hmm.
compared to the rest of the country.
And that's where you still live? That's where you live now?
That's where
yeah.
we live. So we are able to survive. If we lived in LA or New York or something like that, we would have had to have made different choices in our lives
mm-hmm.
and probably would not be able to still be in a band. But because we live in Pittsburgh and the cost of living is so inexpensive, we're
mm-hmm.
able to make choices that we believe in
mm-hmm.
and still able to feed our goldfish and our
mm-hmm.
puppy and whatever.
And I remember reading that you guys originally started AF Records to kind of help some Pittsburgh bands.
Yes.
Is that still a goal
yep,
of the label?
Yeah, we still, a lot of the bands that we release are Pittsburgh bands
mm-hmm.
or local bands.
Do you try to take them on the road with you?
We do when we can. It's just
yeah.
so hard these days to be able to give the band enough money to be able to travel.
Right. Because they all have jobs
and real lives
yeah.
and everything. It's unfortunate that we live in a capitalist society and that everything comes down to an economic decision.
Yeah.
But that's the way we live.
And you still take submissions for AF Records and all
sure.
that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So about your show, I've never seen an Anti-Flag show,
okay.
which is crazy. But my partner Jessica has, and she was especially impressed with you guys coming down into the audience.
Yes.
And she was curious a little bit about how that decision came about.
I saw a band one time,
mm-hmm.
and I can't remember the name of the band, but they were fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a club. And there was nobody at the show. There was like maybe 10 people at the show. So while the band was playing, the singer was grabbing parts of the drummer's equipment and moving it to different places in the room. And the drummer was skilled enough that he could play with what he had left and then move over and play on other parts.
Wow.
And keep everything going.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I was like, that's fucking awesome. They
yeah.
were a really incredible band. It was a great show. And so I was like, when you play drums and you are in the back,
mm-hmm.
traditionally drummers play in the back of the band, it keeps me so far away from everything else that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I'm here is I want to be in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, why don't we bring me and put me in the front?
Oh, cool.
And because in some shows, I'm 30, 40 feet away from everybody. I could be in my home, my living room, watching
yeah.
TV instead of,
yeah.
and it's the same experience. So, so then I was like, let's do this, and it was fun, and it's like, it's performance art because it doesn't always work.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten punched a couple of times, and it can get ugly, but that's all part of the theater of it, and the experience.
Was it a punch in terms of like somebody was just dancing around and accidentally
got
punched?
No, they tried to fuck with. Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's theater, you know.
Weird.
And my two always makes fun of me of this quote because two now comes down with me.
Right.
And he's like, these kids are fucking a mess, and I'm like, well, dude, we are going into their world. Our world is up here.
Yeah.
We are protected in this world. But now we are breaking that barrier and going into the audience world. And yeah. Once you go into that world, anything can happen. And obviously, yeah. I don't want to get punched.
Right.
It's unpleasant.
Right.
And it's really sort of an amazing experience because no matter how big, like we've done this in Europe, and there's like hundreds of thousands of people at the show at these mm-hmm. festivals, and everybody sort of, once they realize what's happening, they get it. And then
yeah.
they're like, okay, we're going to give you space
right.
and we're going to protect you. And
yeah.
so everybody can enjoy this experience together.
Right.
And it's a real camaraderie, you know, it's a, not to get hippie bullshit, but there's a moment that happens there.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, I would think so. Cause I mean, that's one of our favorite things about the punk rock scene is that if somebody falls, someone helps them up.
Yes.
And
when it's at its best, when it's at its
right.
worst, it doesn't always happen. But when it's at
right.
its best, it does.
Yeah. So that I was going to follow up with what was a crazy experience that happened, but it sounds like
yeah.
being punched.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
By
and the
asshole
yeah.
at the
yeah,
show.
And, yeah. And the kids knock me off my stool, and just because they're excited and they want to be part of it, and,
yeah.
and that's all just part of the fun. You're like, oh, I can't play. They take my sticks, and I'm like, I can't play without those. And
right.
then they give it back to me.
Yeah.
And kids, they come up and they hug me while I'm trying to play.
Right,
and,
right, right.
Yeah, it's all an experience.
Do not hug.
Yeah. you can hug after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just not while
yeah.
I have sticks in my hand. It's,
yeah.
It's hard to do things
yeah.
when. People are putting their arms around me when
for sure
any of
the musicians like
yeah.
don't hug them
yeah.
while they're playing yeah
there's more than enough time to hug after the show
yeah for sure
yeah.
In terms of the political stuff, has there ever been a hot button topic or political issue that you guys haven't agreed on? I mean, it seems like you're almost always...
No, we always agree. What we don't always agree on is the tactics to express it.
Okay.
Because we are always in line with what our goal is,
mm-hmm.
but whether that the way to achieve that goal, there's always a lot of discussion.
Okay.
And
there's never been anything that you guys are slightly different about. I don't know.
No.
You're like, I love cows, and Chris too is like, I hate
fuck
cows.
Those cows.
Yeah,
fuck
cows.
Those cows. No, not on politics, on sports, on on food, on
yeah.
music, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But politics, because our politics are very much. It's very Bill and Ted. It's
yeah.
be excellent to each other and,
mm-hmm.
and figure that out. And as long as everybody, in the broader scheme, if everybody believes that we're trying to make things the best for the most people at any given time, then we're all going in the same direction. That just how we get to that point is the
right.
is always the debate.
Yeah,
and as long
which
as
is a good debate.
Yeah, if everybody's trying to get to that point of everybody being nice to each other and excellent to each other,
mm-hmm.
and how do we achieve that? Then
yeah.
we're all on the same team. Let's just figure out how to do that. If
right.
your goal is how can I make it better for me and fuck everybody else, then you're a prick, and
right.
I don't have anything to do with you.
Right, makes sense. All right, so we have two quick fan questions for you.
Okay.
Okay. Anti-Flag music is hard, fast, serious, and kind of serious. What's one thing about yourself that's or I guess you could throw someone in the band under the bus, but that's totally off the wall, ridiculous, not serious. Something silly about one of you guys.
Silly about one of us. I like koi fish.
Okay. Do you have a koi pond?
I used to have a koi pond, and my living situation changed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as soon as my living situation can get back to a place where I can have a koi pond, that is my first goal of any new living situation.
Okay. So it's still...
I don't know when that's silly.
That's
as silly as I get.
Serious.
That's about as silly as I get. You can. If you talk to Justin, he would have a lot of silly things about me.
Yeah.
But that's as silly as I get.
Okay. I guess I asked the other one. I guess the final question are there any women in the punk rock scene that are killing it that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, the Bad Cop
yeah.
ladies are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
The woman in Code Orange is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is... There was just a woman on stage. You weren't here yet.
Yeah.
But she was awesome. There's a woman who we grew up with. Her name was Mary Bielik. She plays bass.
Mm-hmm.
She was a big, she's a metal bass player. But she crossed over into punk rock and did metal. But she is fucking amazing. She played in a band called Mythic, and actually Vice did a whole article about her about a year ago.
Oh, wow.
Too.
So a year ago.
Yeah,
also, she's still doing it.
Yeah. She's nice. Awesome. She's incredible.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a lot of women who are awesome. And, just one of the things when, because now it's a weird experience, but there's a lot of young people who come to, really young people who
right.
come to the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's young women who come to the show, or young girls, I guess, I ask them if they're in a band. And they say, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, because I can't. And I'm like, yes, you can.
Yeah.
And my point in asking that question is to make sure that they realize that there is nothing. Hello. Hi, how are you?
We're
having a chat in here. It's all right. Do you need the restroom?
I might need a puke in a minute.
Okay.
Oh, God. Okay.
Well, then
go,
we'll get out of your
it.
Way.
Yeah, you should do that. That was my last question anyway.
Okay, well, there you go.
It's good timing.
I'm asking.